the future does not exist.
Hello, dear earlobes. This is us. The future does not exist. This is me, Damien Leslie, to my left.
It's Richard Foster, idly flicking through his new purchase book, which we're going to talk about later, but I'll hide it.
And to your left?
It's Marcel van Schoten.
Hello, three of us. The triumvirate are back.
Yeah.
I must admit, it was nice to listen to an episode where I wasn't in. It was good. I enjoyed your little chinwag. I don't listen to ours very much, but when I wasn't in it, I thought, I might give this one a listen. It was good.
Okay.
But here we are. It's been a while.
We're back.
We are.
And we've got a medal to prove it.
Some of us have.
Yeah.
It's quite the medal, too.
It is.
Do you want to explain the medal?
I can try. It's given out for the Leiden Marathon, the half marathon, which is 21 kilometres walking, officially, though it ended up being a little bit more than that. And on it, we have the Morrisport, which is one of the last, I think it is the only last surviving original gate of the city of Leiden.
There is another one on the other side.
Of course, there's the other one on the other side. You're quite right.
The Sailport.
Yeah, that's right. So this is the Morrisport. In the middle, you've got Jochen Meyer, the comedian who has this funny kind of stand up. He's very funny with voices and so on and so forth. And he has this one thing where he goes, I'll just stay for one more beer and I'll stay one for one more beer, blah, 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 blah.
Yes.
And on pointing at the sky is DJ Armin van Buuren, who always gets wheeled out to be Leiden's most contemporary celebrated figure, I think, isn't it?
I bet he got some money for it.
And he probably did. So on the back it says, Leiden heeft door de eeuwen heen talloze grootheden voortgebracht. De hedendaagse iconen zijn Armin van Buuren en Jochen Meyer. Hier treden zij op tijdens Leiden's ontzet 450 by the Morrisport. So there you go. So there they are doing their thing. And now I can put this around my neck as a symbol of the fact, as a signifier, I should say, of the fact that I've done the half marathon and I enjoyed it.
You're a marathon walker now.
Yeah. More importantly, my wife, Mariska, whose knee is not the best, also did it. So, like, if anyone deserves that medal, it's Mariska. So well done, Mariska. I'll just pass.
Yes, proud of both of you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's good fun.
It's good. So that was yesterday?
Yeah.
So you did seem in fine fettle, considering. But you didn't run it, did you?
Was it
an aggressive, like?
Well, you couldn't really. Well, what's interesting about what I did find out is that the psychology of walking. Here we go. I'm going to wander off in my own little head. That you can't really go too fast at the beginning because there's tons of people around you, and there's people really trying to get past you. And there's lots of jostling going on, and people settle down. People get really enthusiastic. Think, I've really got to go for it. And I said to Mariska, right, because I was really worried about her knee. I said, just breathe through your belly. Don't think about the walking bit. And then just look at the front of the crowd and just keep going. And then don't get up. Don't get too close. Don't get too far. And that's not easy for a while. So we were sort of hitting about four kilometers an hour. So kind of strolling it. And then once it starts to thin out.
Yeah.
I actually checked this morning and I gone, God, we were hitting 6K at one point, at 6K an hour, which is quite fast. So we were averaging about 5 kilometres overall, which is standard. So I was pretty happy with it. What's really amazing about walking, when you're walking with a big crowd, is just listening to people. So we heard someone who'd had their pets attacked by wolves. There was people coming in from Gelderland to do the walk.
Yeah.
There was people from Nijmegen. There was like these people wearing incredibly dodgy badges, like Belfast to, you know, Nijmegen is a few dagen. There's kind of, you know, airborne stuff on their hats and everything, thinking like, all right, okay. And then there was just like people just doing normal kind of exercise. We heard all about someone, I think from Wexford, someone's travel plans, who goes, and I'd left the suitcase in the bag. And these kinds of stories where you're thinking, this is great. And
you can't leave a suitcase in a bag.
I know. And there's always really weird kinds of snippets of conversation that were great to pick up on. And I said to Maris, just sort of zone into that. And then at some point, you had to cross the Rhine at just outside Leiderdorp. You walk through the Weide, through Zoeterwoude, Dorp, and then right round up to where the Rhine goes towards Elfen on the Rhine, yeah. And there's a crossing there, and people stop there, and then you got over the boat, and then all of a sudden people start when you got into the Leiderdorp, people started to thin out, and that was actually quite difficult because you know there's only a few people, you could see a few people, and you had to keep watching out for the signs. But then people came together again, and then there were certain points on the way where you saw people who had been sped off flying past you, knackered, sort of having a beer, waiting to join again, and then they'd overtake you again. So we actually didn't break pace, we just kept going.
Yeah.
I think we only stopped once, which is really, it was really interesting. And at the end, you could just hear people just going, oh God, where's the end? Where's the end? Oh, I'm absolutely knackered. I can't, oh no. And I heard someone go, noch ein Brückje, oh yay. And I thought, yeah, this is the point where the last kind of 200 steps where I could see Maresca was like really struggling. Yeah. But yeah, it was really kind of, I really want to do that again. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I really recommend doing a half marathon.
And are you like a prepared walker? Like,
no, not at all. I mean, I do walk a lot, as you know, but like yes. Normally I'd say do 8-9 kilometers a day. Yeah. I normally walk to the station and then back.
Yeah.
Which is like a sprint of like 4K for me.
Yeah.
So it's not really a lot, but at the same time, it's just nice to do.
Yeah.
But like the thing was, I ended up walking 30 kilometers yesterday instead of 21.
Yeah.
I don't know how, but I was thinking, Christ. And then I walked this morning. Yeah. So it's about 6-7 kilometers from my house to yeah. where we're sat. So it's really nice. What you find is you just, you know where the real pain is? It's just around here, around your midriff, yeah. because you swing your arms.
I mean, the distance actually is not a distance that's kind of out of reach for me to walk on a day. We can maybe talk about London for that. But with something like that, there's no rest really.
No.
So it's the continuous thing. That's what would break. I mean, if like what I've not, we used to do, I think when I was a kid, we used to do a sponsored walk, like to do with the church and the school. And that would be like, up and down through the valleys of Weardale, from Crook over towards Eshwinnen and up mm-hmm. through D&S Valley, and it was all up and down. And I think when we did it as a kid, it was a pretty long walk.
Yeah.
But all those kids would run off first of all, and then be caught up after like a couple of miles because we'd exhausted ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
But then we'd kind of like sprint off. But there was always a stop somewhat halfway, and the stop was at a pub. So all the adults would sit and have a pint or two, and then suddenly it would kind of thin out a bit. But that, I always remember like the last bit, like the last mile or two, because you've got that last mile or two is the bit that's, I think it's because you know you're nearly there and you can see where you need to go. And then suddenly it's like all of this like pain kind of flares up on you, and it's like, oh God. At the end, you just remember, but it always felt great to kind of get over the line.
Oh, it's amazing. We got over the line. I just sat down and, it was because they did it in the Harenmarkt, which is where the Jewish, the synagogue is next to Hochfleet. And where it started and ended there. And the thing was, on the paper, it said, oh, in the Fistmarkt, which is the middle of town. And Mariska got to this point where the sun was getting and she's tired. She goes, no, look at this Fistmarkt. It says finish there. Yeah. It says finish over there. That must be the finish. Look, there's medals. No, we have to go to the Fistmarkt. And you realize at some point people start to, you start to lose your sense of anything.
Yeah,
it was
you get fixated on things.
Yeah, it was really funny. And there was a lady dressed up in a sort of new look 1950s Dior new look with lipstick, just going, "Oh, well done," giving his medal. So I got my medal by the well-appointed lady, and then actually, to be honest. It might be worth a trip to the Harenmarkt today because they had an amazing empanada stall. They were really good. I was really, that was like worth it just to have. And I thought to myself, it's pastry.
Yes.
Right now, there's one thing this man wants. Yes.
I want a parcel of food, please.
I want pastry because I've earned it. And I've thought to myself, this is the one time I can not look at my midriff and think, pastry? No. But like, today, pastry? Yes. Oh. Yes, yes. Ticked twice. Yeah.
Excellent. So you're going to do it again next year?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's a posh one that I quite fancy doing.
A posh one
in the Downer in October.
Yeah.
But you get to sample fish and walk through the dunes, and it's 30 kilometres a day.
And it's called the Richard Walk.
That'll be a lot harder than walking around the city, though.
Oh, going up and down the dunes, because it's not... Really, what you don't notice is if you're doing up and down in the dunes, as the crow flies, it would say 30 kilometers. But if you're doing up and down in the dunes, you're adding 10 kilometers at least on it. So you're doing a marathon.
Yeah.
And that would mean that you'd need at least, you'd have to stop for half an hour. But you have to do it within, I think, about 6 hours, I think 7 hours, something like that. So we had to do ours within 5 hours. And we did it, actually. We set off at 10:30 and we finished at 3:30. I was amazed by Marisk how she did it.
That's fantastic.
It was amazing she did it. Yeah, so I'm really proud of her. And
we are really also proud of you, Richard.
Yes.
Thank you. No, I really enjoy walking. The thing was, I decided I wasn't going to walk in all this Lycra stuff. Not that I would ever wear Lycra ever, but I decided to go like in my fatigues. You know, my knackered old pants, which I've been up the Salzburger Alps in. Mm-hmm. I thought the more knackered clothes that I wore up the Salzburger Alps and in the Brenner Pass and all these kind of things where I've also walked, I was wearing that. So I'd look like some kind of tramp, but I could do it.
So you didn't have like a boombox speaker on your back with annoying tunes blasting out.
No boombox.
That would be nice.
There was very little music. Did you wear your music. Cap? Well, I lost it. I lost it. I lost the Sphinx last week.
What?
You lost the Sphinx?
I had to go and buy two more.
Did you report it to the police?
I did.
Did they laugh?
Yes. We went out on a walk looking at Leiden's hidden World War II history, which is incidentally amazing. And then I went to a cafe.
Yeah.
And I put it down and then put it back on my head, and then I thought I put it in my bike bag thinking I don't need to put my hat on, and it must have fallen out on the way, and I went cycling around Leiden for 3 hours afterwards looking for the Sphinx and the cap, and it's gone.
But you lost the cap and the Sphinx.
Yeah. So like I immediately went on to Militaria and bought, well, it got out of hand, right?
Oh god.
So because I thought, well, I need a backup, and then I thought, hang on, there is like this. We're talking about the cap badge of the East Lancashire Regiment, right? Which is a sphinx surrounded by a garland of leaves, and underneath it says East Lancashire.
Yeah.
Now I've got my Lancashire Fusiliers, and of course I've got my Prince of Wales Own Volunteers, which is the South Lancashire Regiment, also had the Sphinx. But then I saw in this eBay thing that there was. Not only did they have the Imperial Crown, but because the regiment had disbanded in 1957, there was also the Edward's crown, which is what Queen Elizabeth wore. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh no, this is the difference of crowns. And I got a bit carried away. So I decided that every other Sphinx badge, not only had to have the Imperial crown at the top, but needed the Edward's crown.
Okay, so how many hats do you need now?
I need a lot of hats.
How many Sphinxes are we talking about? More than one handful?
Yeah.
Okay.
About 10.
I'm very worried about the fact that there's a missing Sphinx in Leiden, though. I mean, there's a story to be...
There might be somebody else wearing a cap with this.
No, imagine the spiritual kind of overtones. They're going to... Like, there'll be some poor unsuspecting student who's wearing it thinking that he's going to look quite dapper.
Yeah.
And then he'll suddenly start ranting about the Battle of Waterloo or something and have no idea where it's come from.
No.
Imagine this spiritual insight that's going to be in...
What's that word? Is it Michael...
Sorry, your fourth book's already writing itself. The Hidden Sphinx of Leiden.
Michael something or other EL networks of mushrooms and tree roots. Just think, all that implanted from my head is now on someone else's cranium. And going in through their hair roots into them.
I have to say that's quite a horrifying thought.
It's a horrifying thought, but one that they deserve.
But quite a intriguing prospect, thought, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, so there you go. So
that's incredibly worrying, considering how much we had to talk about sphinxes in London.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I still like the idea that we can't let the listeners into everything.
Let's not go down the Sphinx route.
I like the idea that Lancashire, basically on the hills outside Todmorden and outside Rochdale, there's some resting sphinxes just keeping watch over the valley.
And I can't understand. Yeah, let's not get into the Childers reforms of 1886.
No.
Because if we do. No. This podcast is over. Let's change the subject very quickly before we get on to the Sphinx.
One of the reasons of the Sphinxes, we had to walk a lot in London as well.
We were
on a mission.
Yes.
We failed that mission.
You did.
Because we were busy doing other stuff.
Yes.
You did. You failed me.
So,
happy that we didn't get the Sphinx, because you have lost those now as well. And you have been very sorry to us.
Well, actually, I thought we were being quite gracious because we saw some memorabilia.
Yeah.
Told you where the location was, and then got a tirade of abuse because we hadn't bought it.
Yeah, Covent Garden Market. They always have that. There's a lot of military on Covent Garden Market, and there might have just been, you know, the Sphinx. And let's not go there.
No.
So flexing his fingers. Regular listeners will have heard you regale a little bit about the trip to London for your one of your book launch events.
Yes.
But there was one morning that we did, I think the first morning we were, was it the first morning we were all together or the second morning? I can't remember. Feels like the first morning we just met up in Soho, didn't we?
We just met up in Soho. That was Saturday.
It must have been the next morning and we decided.
Sunday morning.
You said, I want to have a walk to St. Paul's.
Yeah, that's right. I did.
And then I want to go to the Guards Chapel and was like, okay, we will accompany you. We had a lovely walk through the centre of town. We went down the Strand and down Fleet Street.
Yes.
And
surrounded by runners, and then which is going to be today as well.
We had to kind of maneuver ourselves through streets of running zombies.
Boombox runners.
Yes. And there was one guy who literally had a barrel speaker on his back.
Yes.
Playing.
But we
absolute.
Also showed our experience with dealing with walks.
Yes.
And how to deal with crossings.
Yes. And there were, we terrified three Americans who thought we were going to kill them.
Yes.
Because we just wandered out into a street of like hundreds of runners and managed to weave our way through. But then we realized that whichever way we went, they were kind of serpentine, like snaking in and out of us.
Yes.
And my favorite point of that is when you just decided there was what would normally be a kind of crossing point. And then there were big signs saying, don't cross here, move on. And this Richard just tried to walk across, and this little like stewardess kind of volunteer, she went, I'm sorry, you can't walk here. And you just went, yes. Terrified, and then realised, no, maybe we shouldn't walk down here.
And literally, we just went around the corner and there was no running. So we could just cross the road where we were told to cross the road, and we did. And
we had a lovely walk.
We did.
We went down along
the
South Bank and it was great. And we went to the Guards Chapel. And my favourite historical note of the entire day is you informed us of which were the oldest railings in London.
Yes.
I mean, as trivia goes, that's on a level that I can't compete
William
with
the
at
fourth.
All.
And then by magic, a random person appeared and was like, that's interesting information. Mm. And could not really be bothered.
No. So we went to the chapel. We gave thanks to your dad and stuff. And then Richard
got a little thirsty. Said,
well, Richard had already prearranged to meet some of his friends in town.
Yeah.
So from the Guards Chapel, we could have cut straight through the park, past the Pelicans, and up into town. And the reason for saying that is because Richard doesn't like to be late. So Richard had promised to meet his friends at a certain time.
Yes.
So it was like, well, we're running short. Shall we cut through the park? And he went, oh, no, you know, we can go to the Grenadier.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, it sounds good. He said, it's a pub my dad used to go into. Yeah. And it's just up the road.
The most haunted in London, apparently.
It's just next to the Guards Chapel is how he first introduced it to us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Then when we got to the Guards Chapel, he says, well, it's just over that way.
Yeah.
Pointing behind Buckingham Palace.
Yeah.
So, okay, we wander that way. 40 minutes later, we're still wandering
We had sort of given up on it.
Yes, we had given up on it. Then when he said it's just round here, we were in this kind of warren of streets.
They weren't even streets. They were like courtyards.
We kind of literally walked around it in like almost in like a pagan ceremony. Did like a full 360.
We're Eaton Terrace, Wilton Terrace way. It was Eaton Square way. So it was like absolutely Knightsbridge, you know, like Sloan Ranger
a fair walk from the Guards Chapel, walk. I will say that. And then we gave up on it because we walked around, couldn't find any entrance. And you went, it's the first time Richard has been in a huff with both of us. Have you realized
that?
Yeah,
I was like,
he really took a quiet moment and stormed off on his own.
Yes.
Wandered down the street that was like private entry, do not come here. And then appeared and went, here it is. Yes. Like, oh, okay. And then he took us down this little kind of alleyway and to what has to be said, one of the nicest little pubs in London. It's incredible.
Yes, you will never find it again.
No.
But we know it exists. Yeah.
We know
with
it
one
exists.
Of the strangest signs I've ever seen.
Yes.
So there's a flight of stairs.
A steep flight of stairs.
A narrow flight of stone steps to get up to the door.
Yeah.
And at the top of the steps, there's a sign laminated and stuck to the front door saying, leave prams and pushchairs outside.
Yes.
And I'm just thinking, I'm like, surely that would be more beneficial at the foot of the stairs and not at the top. But it was quite amusing.
The idea that why would you want to get a pram up those bloody stairs?
But also, how often has this happened that they've needed to laminate something and stick it on the front door?
It's amazing.
To their account, it was a valid statement because it was a very small, narrow pub.
Yes.
It was. It was warren.
It wouldn't
like at the
be
back.
Appreciated to have a pram there.
I tell you what, if I ever win the lottery, or if I ever hit jackpot with book sales and stuff, I'm having a lunch in there because the lunch menu looked amazing.
It did. Yeah, it looked very good.
And I thought to myself,
especially with the mannequins pointing at your plate.
Yeah, it was full. I mean, they were all dressed as grenadiers. My dad would have moaned about it for hours because
the four men next to us, they were obviously like kind of hedge fund workers or something, absolute oiks of the worst.
Yeah, they were just oiks.
I could have
that kind of, you know, like we're going to run it up the flagpole and see who salutes it bunch, weren't they? And they were very much like, you know, we're going to go snowboarding in South Africa or whatever people do there.
Pub.
Yeah.
Oh, it's an amazing amazing boozer. So yeah, that was. I think that day.
That was the start of our walking weekend, though.
You two were doing 20 miles a day.
We were there for 4 days, and I think, I walked 89 kilometers in 4 days.
Fantastic.
So every day we got up and the reason we walked was to keep ourselves out of the pub as long as possible.
But
spectacularly failed at that. But for every kilometre we drank at least one beer.
Were you there when I walked to Dalston? No, you weren't, were you?
Yeah, well, I was there at the start and then I left you to it and we tried to persuade you not to do that.
Yeah. No.
And then we decided to nip across town on the tube. But we walked into the longest fucking tube station imaginable.
Oh, you went to Tottenham Court Road?
I've been in that station 100 times, but to get it from where we were to get to the platform was at least a 20-25 minute walk.
Amsterdam Standard, it would have been 3 stops.
Yes. We practically walked to bloody Harlem, like from Amsterdam. It took at least half an hour to get to the platform.
Oh yeah, Tottenham Court Road.
And then, and of course it's ridiculously hot down there and all that, but I mean, it was extraordinary. But we went across town, went down onto the South Back, went to, what's the pub next to the old Tea Clipper, just off London Bridge. And we had a nice beer there. We joked around with that gay couple, do you remember? Because they turned, like, oh, can we have this table? And I was like, well, you have to tell me a story. And then he got all upset.
You got so upset? He didn't tell you about...
He's like, I don't know how to tell stories. And I was like, well, just tell us about your day. And we had a good laugh with them. And then we got a taxi up through town, at which point we met you, and you looked like you'd had a fight. Like, we left you a few hours ago, and you just decided, for reasons I still... You're going to have to let me into this. At some point, from being in Soho, you decided that walking all of the way to Dalston Junction, was something that was humanly possible in a very short amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I call it too much cider, to be honest. I think innocent cider.
It's not that far. Yes, it is, Richard. It's miles.
It was miles.
No, Richard, it's miles away. No, it's just over there, look. okay. And then you were trying to convince us that we should share a taxi with you.
Yeah.
But we didn't need to go up so early. So we're like, well, no. And then you set off on a walk. And then adventures happened.
Adventures happened, yeah. I went miles. London, it's an amazing city to walk around.
Maybe not that stretch.
That stretch is kind of not. there's bits of interest, but there's bits of... Actually, I did walk past a place I'd stayed in, I'd borrowed... When Rats and Rats, weirdly enough, I was reading for Rats and Rats that night from the book, and we'd done this kind of this soundtrack to one of the stories. And what was interesting was I walked past a place where Gary Williams, a friend of this podcast, had put on a gig with Rats and Rats there, and I walked past the place I'd stayed, which is a mutual friend of all of ours, Christopher Dawson. His friend, Claire, she had a house there, and I'd stayed there, and it just sort of, oh God, I can't even remember where I was now. I thought, that's the pub Rats and Rafts played when they first came. And I walked up there anyway, just carried on walking up, you know, through Islington, went down the high street where Mark Headley used to live. Mm-hmm. He used to live on the Essex Road. Walked all the way down the Essex Road, walked all the way into Dalston. And then at one point I decided that it only hit me with, I don't know, about 2 miles to go, that I was desperate to, shake hands with my best friend, to put it in there, to put it lightly. And a pub there was not to be seen. And at this point I started to get wildly excited because I couldn't find there's no bushes, there's nowhere to go. I felt like, say, Lawrence from Feltfields when he needs to find a public convenience, but he can't. Mm-hmm. So I had to do a few little Indian dances just to calm my stomach down the road. And then, but found a pub that was like, had a family day out, and there's loads of kids running out. And I ran into it just going, where are the toilets? At the top of my voice. And then literally the girl behind the counter said, are you all right? Shall I call an ambulance? And shall I call an ambulance? And all these children were looking at me from playing Scrabble or whatever it is on the floor. I don't know what they were doing, blocks and various accoutrements. And I just like ran through them, hoping not to stand on them, and then went to the toilet and then came out. And then she goes, your face has gone from dark red to pink again. I didn't realise I was... And then I got out of the toilet, had a quick pint to come around, and desperately needed to go again. So I must have been holding something like about 8 litres of water. It just disappeared. And then walked through Dalston, which is not the nicest part. I don't like Dalston. I don't care what anyone says. Everyone thinks it's really hip and trendy. I think it's part of the shit. So, but then, yeah, saw the gig, and then you turned up.
We did. That was it. It was great.
Do you know, I got an Uber back. I got an Uber back.
And you didn't. You decided to take another drink at a cocktail bar.
And I did. Yeah, and I went for another drink.
I could not put any more liquid in me that day.
Do you know what? I
remember, I was just like, I could feel it like in my throat. I was like, I am full, beyond full.
I went
tired.
For a secret walk, and I didn't realise until I woken up the next day that I got out at, where did I got out at? Where'd you call it? Where all the theatres are, come on, Shaftesbury Avenue, thinking, oh, well, just nip across, it's easy. I mean, it's like 1 minute. But then decided heroically to go the wrong way and walk around the entire area for an hour and then come back and eat some chips. Because like sometimes at night, I also lose my bearings a bit. So I decided,
it's quite easy in that part of town.
It is a bit easy. Yeah, because it starts to sort of become this kind of gloop of neon and people being sick in, you know, what have you. But yeah, that was quite crazy. I did some crazy walking. That was a crazy walk.
The hotel we were staying in was just off Great Portland Street, and I didn't realise that until the taxi driver started to drive down it, and then I got all excited and spent the last 5 minutes of the taxi driver just being Kenneth Williams. I've come all the way from Great Portland Street. I was going, what's going on? The taxi driver had nobody had any idea what I was going on. I was thoroughly entertaining myself.
Can't beat it.
Great fun.
So there you go, walking. I mean, it has a lot of uses. It keeps you fit, allows you to go to the pub, allows you to keep the old weight off and kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I don't recommend walking from Soho to Dalston.
No.
Right. So if there's one thing to learn from this podcast, it's that.
No, not in a direct route in the way that you did anyway.
Though I did go past a Swedenborg house, and I was quite tempted to go in and check it out, because that's like that little bit of London between kind of just south of Islington, north of Bloomsbury kind of thing. It's really interesting, that area, because it's kind of, no one's there.
It's forgotten, isn't it?
No, I mean, literally. No,
but there's probably a reason why nobody's there.
Even traffic, you know, it was like, it's kind of really old, you know, in a kind of old feeling sort of way. That's really stupid, but there's no one around. There's no one around. Oh. So that was enjoyable. The other bits weren't.
We had some great work. And then the last day.
Oh, yeah, you walked like hell, didn't you?
We walked for an insane amount, but it's a really good, really good wonder because
we were always also trying to kill time.
Yes, because we our flight wasn't till like late in the evening.
Yes.
And then we were like out of the hotel like very early in the morning. So there was like, what do we do with the day? And we was like, well, the first thing we both said, because we'd had like four full days with you, we were like, we're not going to spend time with Richard today.
I don't blame
you. We'd been full on. We'd even started calling days by Richards. We've had four
Richard
full
one,
Richards.
Richard twos. Yeah, full. Yes.
And, and then you, I think you were off to the British Museum to meet somebody. So we met you for breakfast.
We did meet him.
At Bruno's
in the morning.
Mm-hmm. And then we said to her, and then we had no plan.
No.
So we just like started aimlessly wandering, and then we decided to go and see the exhibition at the Haywood that you would mention.
Oh yeah, Linda Sterling.
The Sterling, and so we went to that, and then we just
pointed at boats, at bridges.
We did.
Most of the tourist things.
We walked all the way to the tower, so Marcel could point at the tower.
Yes,
tower. Good stuff.
And then we even walked up all the way up to the Barbican. It was like we just walked for miles.
Do you know what I did? I went to see my old friend John Doran from The Quietus, and also Jeff Young, who wrote the amazing Ghost Town and Wild Twin. We were having a chat. I said, I'll see it at the British Museum, but we couldn't get in. So there's a nice cafe right across from the British Museum. It's really quiet, nice. Mm. So we went in there. And John goes, let's go for a walk. And then I thought John was going to St. Pancras, to the British Library. And John thought I was going somewhere else. And we ended up at Hyde Park Corner.
That's quite, okay.
Just walking, right? And then, because we were just talking about John's new book, of which I'll tell you offline, because I don't want to spoil it, but it's really quite sensational if he pulls this off. Mm. And then John goes, where are you going? I said, I'm going to St. Pancras. He goes, oh no, man, we're going the wrong way. So we just hadn't realised. And they just like, so we basically turned around and walked all the way back. So that was like another wild London walk. I mean, I would never be a tour guide in London. It'd be a disaster, wouldn't it?
I just love walking around it.
But it is an amazing city to walk around.
Yes, it's a brilliant place for a wonder.
I don't think I would book a tour with you as a tour guide, Richard.
No, especially
maybe if I was just pointlessly wanted to walk around, but if there was any direction reason I would love to go to, I'll probably find another tour guide.
I would happily meet you at a place, but I would really kind of study a map very quickly if you said anything in the realms of like, it's only over there.
Yes.
It's just up the road. Okay, exactly. Let me check this out before I walk 19 miles in a direction. And also like when you're kind of heading on, I know it's roughly in this district. You don't know where it is, do you? No. Okay.
No. Vaguely, I trust your instinct.
But a fabulous weekend that was. Yeah, it was great.
I have to say one thing about yesterday that was... And this sounds just ridiculously nerdy. I really want to explore Lyda Dorp because we found this weird modernist 1960s church there, and they had loads of that kind of decoration, sort of 50s, 60s kind of sub-Picasso decoration on the side of the church. And then they found this like really nice fish bar. I'm thinking, wow, Lyda Dorp's got something to offer. And I'm thinking, I need to, and Marcel is now shaking his head, for those who are not looking at the camera.
That might be it.
Unless you want
to go to the Vaughan Mall.
I might need to do an aimless wander. I might call my walks aimless wandering around Lyda Dorp to see if there's anything there.
You do know that you can almost smell Lyda Dorp from here.
Can you? Well, yes, it's
just across the river.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah, of course.
We're quite close to Lyda Dorp here.
Mm-hmm. It's like... I didn't realise how much of an enveloping shape it's got, because it literally goes around the north, right the way around, doesn't it?
I think it's more the other way around. I think Lyda is almost eating up Lyda Dorp, not Lyda Dorp is embracing Lyda.
Uh-huh. Lyda Dorp's become a bit like New Venepin. It's just rows and rows and rows and rows and rows of like that new build.
I'm going to stop on one fact on this. Did you know that Leiden Station, you know what its original name was? It's Oostgeest. Because Oostgeest was there.
Yeah, but
yeah. So Usgeist is like that was all Usgeist,
and nobody could pronounce it, so they decided to make it Leiden. Yeah.
And it's just a matter of time till Usgeist will become.
Yeah,
a part
we're going to lose our fire brigade, which is like kind of sad, but because we've got an like Haldern, we've got an independent volunteer fire brigade.
Ooh. Excellent.
And we
have you joined up?
Are they called Maltesers?
I wish.
What chocolate name would you give the Dutch Volunteer Fire Brigade?
The Volunteer Fire Brigade. Oreos.
That's very American.
Oreos. I mean, Snoopy doesn't really have it. Snoopy's. But no, couldn't do it. Okay. So, Marsh, you were talking about introducing a new segment into our fun-filled talks.
I was talking, yes, because we have an established writer now among us. So my idea was we all like to read and also like to listen to music. So not to make it like a review channel, but more like a tip. So give a tip about the book you're reading.
What's currently in motion?
Yeah, but it could be a book that you were supposed to read like years ago, and now finally got the time and interest to pick up and read, and an album you're currently listening to, and that could be an album that you rediscovered, or one that you just found on some way of the internet.
Okay, like it. Well, who wants to go first?
I think one of you two go first because I've been yapping. So go on.
Yeah, Marcel, this is your show. You can introduce it.
All right. My book. I've picked up a book called Root Boy. It's the one of the guy from this lead singer of a Dutch band called Urban Dance Squad. There is it's his biography. I'm not sure if he wrote it himself. I'm not sure if he is able to write that good. But it's his life story, his misunderstood life story. Mm-hmm. And it's quite an interesting story because it's quite an interesting band. It's the band that, according to themselves, inspired lots of other bands, including bands like Rage Against the Machine and whatever. But it's the story of how he, as a misunderstood youth from, I think from the Caribbean, came to the Netherlands at a foster family and need to find his place in life and need to find his place in the music scene and figuring out what he could contribute to it.
That sounds really interesting because they've always been cited from people I know in the Dutch music industry as being the band that could have become properly international at some point, weren't they? They were going to be the thing.
Oh, yeah. And I think in a way they sort of got their claim to fame. I'm not sure if they actually got recognized as much as they should be, but I think if you listen to the first couple of albums, you're like, wow, this is a very interesting band.
Yeah.
And then if you realize when they release these albums, you're like, okay, that's quite impressive because they created a sound that became very popular after they released the songs.
Yeah. I think they're kind of like a bit forgotten. I agree with you, actually. I think they are really special. And it's one of these things that you never really hear from their point of view. You always hear from people who just go, yeah, they could have done this, could have done that.
Yeah. Now, it's very interesting because at the moment he's still performing as Root Boy playing Urban Dance Squad. That's probably because of a licensing arrangement.
Doubtless.
Yeah. And it's not the full band anymore.
No.
But it's very interesting, and I just started because it's a huge pill of a book.
It's one of these doorstop things.
It's almost as big as himself.
Oh my word!
He's just a tiny dude. But it's I'm very curious what it where it will lead to, and I'll update you in another time.
Update us. And albums. Yeah. What have you been listening to?
Albums.
Urban Dance Squad.
I bet he's been listening.
Listened to that, but I also listened to another. It's an. I think they're Chicago based. It's called Show Me the Body.
And oh yeah.
It's very cool. It's a very hardcore hip hop kind of thing, and they released an album Corpus 2, and it's a combination of all kinds of friends got together and made an amazing album that's impossible to get if you live in Europe. Or and you can also you can order it, but it will the postage will cost you more than the album itself, which is very annoying. But at least it's on streaming, so I can listen to it like that.
Okay,
so that's it for me.
That's cool. For me, I could reel off a list for both of these things, but for music, the one that's I just can't get away from at the minute is the new Wild Hearts album, the Satanic Verses of the Satanic Rites of the Wild Hearts. It's just such a dose of fun. I can't get over how much it makes me smile from start to finish. It's great. But the band that I've discovered, and I couldn't tell you the name of an album, but I'm really in the middle of a rabbit hole, and I've never heard of them before until a friend played them the other way, is Big Thief.
Oh, yeah,
from
yeah.
Chicago, California. I'm really in the rabbit hole with them. And okay. Everything I go after is good. And like they sound like 19 different bands on the same album. They're incredible. And the singer has like, the singer alone has like four or five different voices. And it's like almost, I'm obsessed with them. I think they're great. On the book front, recently finished one, which I just picked up by accident because I liked the cover, which is a way I like to kind of pick books.
Me too.
By T. Kingfisher, called A House With Good Bones. It's a bit of a ghost story, but it's a little bit not. But it's one of the funniest books I've read in ages, just because the main character, who's the narrator, is just like, it's written in her, it's very conversational. It's written in like, as if she's just talking to you. But it's just really, really funny.
Nice.
And it's quite scary and quite weird, and it goes into some very strange, and there's loads of vultures in it, so the bird box and things. So it starts with her turning up to her mum's house, and there's a vulture sitting on the porch, and there's a whole bunch of vultures like hanging around the house.
Okay.
And it goes into some very strange territory. That was a joy, an absolute joy of a book. But the one that I picked up last week in Manchester when I was exhausted and decided I could not walk any further is actually a book about walking.
Oh, no, really?
And it's a book about walking in Amsterdam. And it's called The Invention of Amsterdam, A History of Europe's Greatest City in 10 Walks, by an Englishman called Ben Coates.
Ben Coates, yeah, he used to write for the Times.
Yeah, well, he's now living in Amsterdam.
Long time as well.
Apparently, he has got a Dutch wife, but apparently he was out running sometime like last year or something, and thinking he was still young and sprightly, jumped over a fence or something like that, landed wrong and broke his leg. And then in recovery for that, like in order to get himself back on his feet, he decided to walk around Amsterdam. But he's also been reading the history of Amsterdam, so the book is essentially 10 walks around Amsterdam where he's explaining how the city and stuff come together. It's actually really nicely put together. I'm really enjoying it, and there's a little expert just on the first couple of pages that made me laugh, and I thought, okay, I'm gonna enjoy this, I think. So I was like flicking through it in the bookshop, and by the time I got to this, I went, yes, I'm going to read more of this. So he says, I feel guilty for a moment for not supporting my adopted home country by ordering something Dutch, then cheerfully overcompensate by ordering quintessentially Dutch bar snacks, a small platter of greasy bitterballen, deep fried meatballs that stretch the definition of meat to its absolute limits.
Yeah.
And I thought, yes, that'll do for me.
Brown fruit, man.
So that's what's on the list.
Okay.
Well, for me, I mean, I'll start with a record. I mean, the camera might be able to see this, but we'll talk about that in a minute. I'm actually, it's kind of work related. I'm doing a review feature for The Quietus with a new band called Osmium, which is Hilda, forgive me, Hilda Gwynoddottir, I think is how you pronounce her name. She played with, you know, all sorts of people. She's pretty famous. She did the Joker soundtrack and the rest of it. Ruli from Senyawara, which is the guy who has his crazy voices, is Indonesian sort of avant-garde noise act, but he has all these different kinds of voices. And then two guys who make their own instruments, and it's this kind of really heavy ritual music where it's all programmed they have something called a Haldra phone, which is like a kind of cello with pickups in it and also speakers in it, which is like hell. And also a mono, a monotone, I think it is. It's like a one-stringed instrument as well. They've programmed it. It all sounds a bit pretentious and a bit over the top.
It's incredibly pretentious.
Yeah, but it's really good. And I ended up interviewing Hilda and Rulli, who was at a noise gig in Java. I mean, like, Hilda was driving her son to football practice and Rulli was at a noise gig in Java. And you can get more pretentious than that. Mm. But it was a really nice interview with them. And I was listening to the album and... As is the way with when you put an interview together, you're kind of, you know, asking around thinking, how should we go about this? And John Doran from The Quietus, he goes, oh man, you want to go and listen to this record? And this, I really enjoy the Osmium record a lot. It's very much ritual thumps and bangs and grunts and that kind of stuff. But John said, listen to this record because there's playing a Berenbau on it. And that's also a one-stringed instrument that is... It might have kind of a lead in to your feature. And it's by Brazilian jazz dude from the 1970s called Nana Vasconcelos, right, or Vasconcelos. And it's called Saudades. And it's amazing. It's brilliant. It's that kind of light Brazilian samba inflected pop music that they had in the 60s, you know, that kind of, that whole thing that Brazil became famous for in the 60s. But it's also with a Berimbau. I really, really recommend you get it. It's fantastic. You can find it on, you know, all terrible streaming platforms that rip off artists. But Nana Vasconcelos, I've been going back into his back catalogue. It's fantastic. If you like Herbie Hancock kind of Brazilian, you know, floaty 70s, 80s music, you're in for a massive treat. So I really, really enjoyed that.
We know good Herbie Hancock story.
Yeah.
What was Stevie Wonder's manager called again?
Keith Harris.
Keith Harris told us that when he'd first moved out to LA and he was started working for Stevie, he turned up at Stevie's house. Stevie says, I need you to drive me to my sister's house. And Keith says, okay, where does she live? Stevie says, I don't know, I'm blind.
That's no joke.
So he got into the car. Stevie's in the back. He's like driving through like LA and they're going down Sunset Strip. And anyway, this one day they're going down and the car needed petrol. So he pulled into a gas station on Sunset Strip. And whilst he's filling the car up, he said to this strange, like disheveled man started like stumbling up to the car. And he's like, looked at the guy, goes, Hey, Stevie, how you doing? Hey, Stevie. And then he's thinking, who the hell's this guy just like wandering off the street? So like forced himself in between the door and this guy. And he's like kind of trying to manhandle him out the way, thinking, Christ, trying to get in the car. And then Stevie recognized the voice and goes, oh, hey, Herbie, how you doing? How is things? And it was Herbie Hancock just kind of straggling down the street, looking like a complete mess. And Keith's like trying to kind of push him away.
Stevie and Herbie. Yeah, amazing. Oh. But I really recommend you get that record. And this book, I'm a massive fan of Alexander Baron. His war novels, From the City, From the Plough, Humankind, I can't remember the third one, because he was a Jewish communist who joined up in 1940, fought in Italy, ended up in Normandy, which is like the two bloodiest campaigns, which are insanely good books. And he also wrote a brilliant couple of books about the Spanish Civil War.
Yeah.
But he sort of died in relative obscurity. And now there's like B.S. Johnson a few years back, there's kind of a revival, and also Gerald Kirsch, another amazing, brilliant Jewish writer. There's a bit of a revival, a bit of a reprint. And this has just come out. It's called The Low Life. And on the back, you know, it's Sebastian Faulks, William Boyd, Ben Myers, Kathy Unsworth, John Williams. I mean, they're all writers I admire. And it's about this guy who's just into racing on the dogs in 1950s London. And like some of the writing in it is absolutely explosive. And about him trying to get money on the gamble. And there's one of the best ways, what do you call it? The best sort of descriptions of gambling you'll ever read. It's absolutely mental. Here we go. This is he's just won 300 quid in 1950, let's say 1956, so it's a fair bit of money.
Mm. Yeah.
And then he's decided to blow it all, right? And then it just goes, right, I'm just going to read you a couple of paragraphs here. And I'll try and do it in a cockney voice, right? The way my eyes bored into it, you would have thought there was a computer clicking inside my head to give me the winner. But all I could hear inside my head was a buzz, a scrape on my nerves that keyed me up, wound me up to do the med thing like a clockwork train. My eyes went up and down the names, but they only saw one name, the number 5 dog. I could give no reason, simply this was my dog. I cannot tell you what is in me at such times. There is something like death. Go on, squeeze the trigger. Cold water pours into my lungs when I breathe. The muscles in my arms cramp. I am full of knots that are going to get tighter and tighter unless I put the money on. But there is also the exulting certainty that this is my victory. This is the last skyline and the big rock candy mountain is in front of me. Go on, Harry boy. Take £1,000, £2,000 home with you. They'll be talking about you at the barbershop tomorrow. All the snorers will be round you and you'll hand out loans like an emperor. Harry boy Bowers. Harry boy Bowers. He walked away from Haringey with 1,500 knicker in his pocket. But I know what's going to happen. I pay in my money, all of it. There is no magic unless I pay in all of it. Keep back £1 and, but I can't. Who is making my fingers move? Not me. I lean back. I breathe deliberately. I become calm. The preparations, the race, the loudspeakers and the hubbub mean nothing to me. I know what's going to happen. It's amazing.
Cool.
It's absolutely brilliant, this book. I mean, anything by Alexander Baron. I mean, Ian Sinclair's a massive fan and he's written the introduction to this new edition.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a better description of fighting soldiers than Alexander Baron's, because he actually did fight proper combat fighting in the Second War. About the English experience. The Jewish experience is all here. London's experience is all here. He writes about Hackney a lot. It's mostly set in Hackney. It's amazing. So if you see any Alexander Baron, and I mean, quickly, because we've got a camera now, I can show you the cover. The cover is brilliant. 3 greyhounds racing. Really go and find this book.
Yeah.
Really, really, really recommend it. So, and it's available in the Netherlands if you're over here. Got it in Athenaeum, so, you know.
Cool.
Cool shit. That's nice. Where I am at present.
Have you ever been dog racing? Or been to the dogs, as you would say?
I don't think I have, no.
A night out of the dogs.
I used to love it.
I've got no interest in horse racing at all.
No.
My dad used to be, I watched my dad throw a lot of money away at horse racing. Horse racing was always like, it always just looked like it was full of assholes.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, yeah, and there's like just a bit odd. But the dogs was just normal people. And we would like go through, I think we'd go to Sunderland or Washington, one of the places, and we'd go for like a night out at the dogs. So it'd be like a few car fulls and we'd go through and everyone would get tanked up and just sit. But it used to be so full, but it was also like really grimy. Like it was like, there's no airs and graces at all. It's like a few wooden benches. But it was like, it could get really excited.
Nice.
And there's something just quite fun about watching a bunch of greyhounds really tear after this thing.
Oh yeah, I can
quite
imagine.
Quite exciting.
I've been to a couple of horse races. Mm. I mean, I can tell you one crazy story about my horse racing, because my dad's regiment, the Coldstream Guards, they had every year a meet at York called the Coldstream Guards Cup. And I went one year with Mariska. And that was possibly the drunkest I have ever been. Mm. In fact, it was amazing. Just to, the only good thing about horses, I've been to the Nags a few times. The only good thing about horse racing is hearing a load of horses coming towards you at speed, and the noise is unbelievable. I mean, amplification, we're talking about 90 dBs. Mm. It's loud when those things come towards you.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, and then you hear people cheering. That I can get off on. The betting, all the paraphernalia, all these people dressing up thinking they're posh, or vice versa, if you're in the north, people are getting absolutely slammed on dunk drunk to the point where you've just got these people in a field fighting.
Yeah.
It's like really uncool. Yeah. But that was the only time I ever did it.
The golf club at Crook, there's a trainer has his gallops pretty much going up the hill just behind the part of the golf course, and used to like I quite enjoy watching the horses run or things like that, but just for some reason the racing just turns me off. And I think it's more to do with dad and stuff. But I can't explain why I enjoyed the dogs so much, but the dogs was great fun.
Great fun. There you go.
Maybe I just like dogs. I think that's what it is.
Yeah, could be.
Have you ever been to any kind of racing, any animal racing?
I'm not sure if I went to animal racing.
What's the Dutch? Is there a Dutch equivalent? I don't
think there is.
Don't ever
is
hear of Dutch really. Horse racing or...
Yeah, you got a horse...
I mean, your pony and trap stuff that happens in the...
And I think you have a track in... you have Duindicht in the Hague where they do the horse racing.
Okay.
I'm not sure if it really was... Yeah, it's probably have if there's betting involved.
Yeah,
there's Dutch more horses in this country than any other. I think isn't it per head of population? I think it's like West Germany or the West German bits that go into Holland, like low.
Yeah, but it's more
Dutch.
It's more of competition, like fancy walking or jumping or just riding with it than competition like
the
racing.
The Dutch
like
horse win.
Stuff.
The Dutch horse win those things, don't they? Like they're really good.
The pigeon racing.
Yes. There's a couple of guys in Lissa have racing pigeons.
Yes.
They used to always sit on our roof.
But that's less exciting to watch.
I used to enjoy watching them fly around until they landed on my roof and then shit everywhere.
Were they not awarded the Dickens Medal?
No.
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 Oh.
They were occasionally awarded a stone being thrown at them.
Yeah.
Oh. Bless.
Not all to be cruel or anything, but get off my roof. Get off my roof.
Yes. Shall we finish off?
We should. Where are we going for a walk?
Not sure.
Well, I'm walking back. I have
walking's
to walk back.
Walking's good for you. It helps you sort your head out.
I might walk past the
impressive
pub.
All right.
I would be probably busy and I don't have time anymore.
Oh.
That's normally your excuse.
I know. But today I'm feeling sort of refreshed and walking.
Oh my God, that sounds dangerous.
Well, we've got to walk through the marathon.
We have to walk through the marathon anyway, so we'll all walk that way.
It may take us a while to get anywhere.
Yes. We will, indeed. Anyway,
but it's a lovely day.
And we should get
it's lovely
and
to share some time with you both.
Yes. You too, mate.
All right.
All right.
Until next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Nicely done.
The future does not exist.